And welcome back into Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning. And it is that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our man Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Nate and TD, and Talking with TD. Teron, what's going on, man? How we doing?
Hey, what's going on, man? A lot of Arthur Smith news, so it's been buzzing.
It has been buzzing, and speaking of that, you know, reports coming out that maybe Arthur Smith is close to a deal with Atlanta, at least has been offered the job by the Atlanta Falcons. What would you think of that fit for Arthur Smith in Atlanta if he decides to take that job?
I think it's a really good fit, and I feel this way. They could go, and he could go in, and I have some success with Matt Ryan this year. And they, at the number four pick, could draft their quarterback of the future. There's different guys that it could be. You know, if Justin Fields should be available, they should absolutely pick him. They could always look at possibly trading back a bit and getting a guy like Zach Wilson. You know, Trey Lance has gotten mentioned. He's a guy that a lot of these draft nicks like. I'm not as high on him, or Zach Wilson. But the long story of it short is, they could get a quarterback of their future this year, have some success with Matt Ryan this year as well, and groom him. So it's kind of like buy one, get two free, if you follow me. So that's a good idea. Then when you look at the offense, Julio Jones, he's aging, but still, you know, he's talented. You got Olamide Zaccheaus and, of course, Calvin Ridley. They could grab a running back. There are different things that they could do. I think the main thing is going to require patience, but I like that situation for Arthur Smith, because I think he can really turn things around with that organization.
So, TD, Josina Anderson reports that the Titans at least had some kind of, you know, contact with Tony Elliott, OC at Clemson, which I thought was interesting, you know, to at least gauge interest, and of course, we also have reports out of Pittsburgh about Terrell Austin, you know, talking to the Titans on the DC side. But just on the OC side, how likely do you think it is that Mike Vrabel goes outside this current offensive staff to go hire an outside OC to replace Arthur Smith?
I think it's definitely possible, and I would say it's likely, but you have to look at what you have in staff, too. I feel like Pat O'Hara is definitely a candidate, the QB coach. Todd Downing has done it before. As an OC, you know, with the Raiders. And then Keith Carter is an interesting one, because you look at what he's done with that offensive line over the last couple of years. Obviously, that's something. And you know, I would imagine that, you know, he would be someone that could bump up to that job as well, especially being as though, you know, his time with Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta. So those are intriguing names that should be mentioned, but it's kind of wide open now. And I think the fact that they reached out to the Clemson OC, I think that really shows that it is wide open.
TD, we saw the Ravens obviously come in here and just stifle the Titans offensively. As you look ahead at the rest of the playoffs here, what kind of a chance do you give the Ravens in the AFC beginning this weekend against Buffalo?
I think they win. To be honest with you, I think they have the formula. I mean, that's a going to your house and smack you in the mouth type of organization. So I think they're in good shape there. I love what they do with Lamar Jackson as far as dual threat. And he showed last week that he could throw the football outside of the numbers. And he's a guy that you absolutely have to be disciplined in when you rush. And then you look at the defense, I think they match up well. Jimmy Smith, and this is something that you know, I think is kind of floating under the table. He has done really good in the past against Antonio Brown. You know, one of those change of direction route runners that, you know, just are exceptional and create separation. He's a bit older now, but I would put him on Stephon Diggs, and I think that would be a good matchup. It favors the Bills, but I still think that would be a good matchup. So defensively, I feel as though they match up, man. They blitz all of the time. Josh Allen has done well against the blitz, but I think this Ravens team, I think they go into Buffalo and they beat the Bills.
Any other, you know, the obvious, the big upsets would be, of course, you know, the Rams going into Lambeau or the Browns going into Kansas City, the 2-1 seeds. We get to see them this week. You think there's any chance in either of those?
I mean, there's always a chance. I'll say it's not likely. Even, man, the Browns are red hot, red hot. So I wonder if they go in there and get off to an early start and the Chiefs don't rebound. Remember what happened last year with the Texans and Chiefs? And, you know, they had to bounce back and work some magic. And if you look at what happened when the Titans played the Chiefs, they got off to a fast start too. But both times the Chiefs were able to turn things around. I wonder if that happens with the Browns, as hot as they are. I wonder if the Chiefs will be able to bounce back. I think they do. I have them beating the Browns.
ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Nate and TD, and talking with TD, Teron Davenport, on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And TD, we've talked about this at times throughout the season, but now that the season is over and the body of work is complete, as you're John Robinson and the Titans and you're evaluating moves to make in the offseason with Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith and Jayon Brown, how would you rank those three in terms of priority? And did the way that Corey Davis finished the season in the last three games impact how you view him at all?
No, it doesn't impact it. Obviously, you would hate to have three games where it's not too good, right? Two out of the three, nothing in the box score, only two targets. So you definitely would like to see that be better. But I still think Corey Davis is the top option. They have to bring him back. And if they don't bring him back, then that would mean that they signed a guy like Allen Robinson. I think you 100% have to, because you're losing Arthur Smith, right? And you can't lose one of your top receivers as well. So I think in order to maintain that balance, you have to bring that guy back. Now, after Corey Davis, I would say Jonnu Smith. And then from Jonnu Smith, I would say Jayon Brown. And the thing that's so crazy about that is I think Jayon Brown is the best player out of those three. But from a depth standpoint and a total pitcher standpoint, I think, the ranking goes a little bit differently. And I feel like David Long Jr. is a guy that could step in and help ease that loss of Jayon Brown. You look at what he did this year, a lot of solid play, but it could even go back to the Chiefs game in week 10 of 19 and then also the Ravens game in the divisional round last year. He showed that he could step in and be successful.
Yeah, no, I agree, TD. I mean, I think Jayon is a really important player, really good player, but, I mean, you're going to have to make some hard choices here. And you may also have to, you know, make some other hard choices for guys who aren't free agents. I look at a Malcolm Butler. I guess you could look at a Kenny Vaccaro. I mean, obviously, we don't know what the future is with Adam Humphries. That may be a decision out of their hands anyway, but – any of those guys or anyone else that comes to mind in terms of, you know, last year none of us were talking about Jarrell Casey obviously being moved, but maybe a semi-surprising move the Titans could make to shed some salary and give them more freedom to look elsewhere for a player?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely possible. You mentioned some names there. I think, you know, Kenny Vaccaro is in there too. As much as it would hurt them to see him go, that may be something that they do as well. You know, again, doing it from surplus, right, with Dane Cruikshank coming back and Amani Hooker playing so well, and obviously Byard where he is. So there are different moves, and like you said, it's they have some tough decisions to make. And, you know, I don't envy John Robinson's position, but I believe firmly that he'll make the right decisions for the organization, and they'll continue their upward rise. I mean, this is a team that, you know, I feel has become an established playoff team for the NFL.
TD, the season finale of Nate and TD tonight at 6:00 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. What's on the docket tonight?
Oh, we're just going to talk some shop, man. We're going to reflect on the season. We're going to look at some of the things spinning forward. And Nate, he's not going anywhere. We won't have the Nate and TD show for an hour, but you'll get a 15-minute segment of Nate and TD on Talking with TD. Can't let a good thing end, and that's really what it's looking like.
Absolutely. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Nate and TD and Talking with TD, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex. TD, really appreciate you, man. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. You guys take it easy.
Absolutely. You as well. Hey, and Joe, it's interesting. Like, you take a look at some of the options the Titans had, and we talked so much about Davis and Jayon Brown and Jonnu Smith, but I do wonder, is there another surprise move that could come this offseason, very similar to what we saw last year with Jarrell Casey? And, you know, Corey Curtis earlier in the week brought up Kenny Vaccaro. You heard TD talk about Kenny Vaccaro there as well. How realistic do you think it is that maybe Kenny Vaccaro, based on what the safety position looks like right now, the surplus of talent that you have there, maybe he's not there next year from a cost-cutting standpoint?
Yeah, I think it's possible, and I think TD brought up another important name is Dane Cruikshank. I mean, he's hurt basically all year. I mean, how do you feel about Hooker being with Byard and Cruikshank being your three? If you feel good about it, that might be a move you make. Although I think Kenny Vaccaro has been terrific overall for the Titans. And, you know, I think it was a huge signing when Jonathan Cyprien got hurt in 2018. But those are the type of things that happen in this league when you have, you know, a depth guy in a rookie contract who you feel like can come in and keep improving and give you similar play for less money. I mean, that's why I think Jayon Brown is probably somewhere else, because I think David Long has demonstrated enough to step in there. So I think that's possible. You know, I think Malcolm Butler's possible too. I really like Malcolm Butler. I really like how he played this year. I wouldn't predict that, but I think you got to put all those moves like that on the table, because if you're John Robinson, it's a challenging puzzle, especially when you know you have to go find people who can get after the quarterback, probably draft and free agency.
Make sure you're tuning in this hour for the cue to call for your chance to qualify to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Columbus Blue Jackets at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow night. And when we come back, we're going to have a little bit more Titans discussion, revisit our poll question of the day, and also throw this out. As you look at the AFC South right now with the Colts and the Texans and the Jags, each in different situations, each with different drama of their own, what scares you the most if you're the Titans fan about those three in the next 3 to 5 seasons? We'll discuss that when we come back. Also have Terry Criss joining us at 8:30. A lot still to come. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth are with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Let's revisit our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. And today's question is this. Titans fans, what is your concern level about Jacksonville after the hiring of Urban Meyer and the likely selection of Trevor Lawrence? The options are very nervous, I'm in wait-and-see mode, or not nervous at all. There's 332 votes so far. 49% say they're in wait-and-see mode. 42% say I'm not nervous at all about those Jacksonville Jaguars. And only 9%, Joe Rexrode, say that they are very nervous with Urban Meyer and probably Trevor Lawrence joining the fold in Jacksonville. I'm a little surprised that the number is that low of Titans fans that would be nervous about Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer coming into the division. But maybe that's just a nice indictment of how much the Titans have owned the Jags as of late.
Is that Todd with a bunch of burner accounts just hitting voting. Very nervous?
Just very nervous all the time. Again? Could be.
Yeah. The Jags are about to dominate. To me, I think you'd be a little bit jumping the gun to be very nervous right now, you know? I mean, I think wait and see is the right answer, frankly, because who knows? I mean, it could work out great for them, but being very nervous, you know, we've seen so many great college quarterbacks who have not worked out in the NFL. It's not like there's ever a sure thing. And so I can't say Trevor Lawrence is a sure thing. And I do have questions about Urban Meyer handling the pro game, his offensive system. I mean, obviously, he's been a very successful college coach, and there are some things that have changed that I think make it more likely for college coaches to be good in the NFL, but there are still questions about him. And so I think very nervous right now would be someone who maybe tends to be too nervous.
If this situation was developing in Indianapolis, like if the Colts were getting Urban Meyer as their coach and they were about to draft Trevor Lawrence as their number one overall pick, I would be smashing the very nervous option on this poll question. But since it's Jacksonville, it's total wait and see mode for me.
You just think they're going to screw it up. Like there's always that chance that they just totally mess it up.
Always a chance of that happening.
I can see that.
Duval.
Thank you.
I don't know, man.
Stop
it. I don't know.
I was waiting for that.
This might be it.
Could be it.
Dynasty in Jacksonville.
Maybe Urban comes in and changes everything, turns it around. But it's interesting, and you brought up the Colts there in the division. And I just look at the next 3 years for this Titans team. And, you know, Henry's under contract for the next 3 years. Tannehill's under contract for the next 3 years. And I think, you know, looking much past that in today's NFL is a fruitless exercise because so much can change even in the three-year window that we're talking about. But if you're the Titans, like which team in the division scares you the most moving forward? Because they've all got issues of different kinds. You've got the Jags with Urban Meyer coming in, probably Trevor Lawrence coming in as well. And that's exciting, but we have no idea what kind of a head coach Urban Meyer is going to be at the NFL level. Quite frankly, we don't know what his commitment's going to look like at the NFL level either. And then you go to Houston and the drama right now with Deshaun Watson and that organization and how they seem to be at odds with each other, at least Deshaun Watson is with the organization. I don't know how that situation is going to turn out. You've heard, you know, trade rumors, maybe Deshaun wanted to get out and go to Miami. I mean, it's just a crazy situation right now in Houston. And then in Indy, what's the quarterback position look like? I mean, Phillip Rivers, I thought he came in and did a nice job to decent job this year for Indy, but he's not the long-term answer there. So does he come back next year? If not, what does Indy do at quarterback? Until they get it figured out at that position, I don't know how much of a threat they're going to be in the AFC playoff picture. So it's just fascinating for me to think about if you're the Titans, as you look around the rest of the division, which team scares you the most? Because I think you can make compelling arguments for any team.
Well, to me, it's the Colts because, you know, even if you're right, he's not the long-term answer, but even with Phillip Rivers at times doing the Phillip Rivers thing, throwing bad picks or, you know, obviously showing some of his limitations at his age, they were good. They were very good this year. And I think they have the best all-around team other than that position in the division. And, you know, they've got to figure out left tackle now, of course, but you know, if they bring him back, I mean, I think it's Titans Colts next year. I mean, I still, now in the 3 year term, that's the question. You know, I don't know. I think the one thing to watch this offseason, and Chris Ballard talked for a long time to reporters the other day and basically was like, I want a franchise quarterback, but I'm not about to just sell the farm to go try to grab one.
Right.
So, I mean, it sounds like he's comfortable with Rivers back next year. And again, that may sound good to Titans fans, but I still think that's a team that is going to be right there with you to win the AFC South. While, you know, the Jags are going to be still, you know, it's going to be early for them. And I don't know with Watson, the Texans, it's just so hard to know how that's going to look. But I also think there's still that chance that all of a sudden one day we wake up and Matthew Stafford is on his way to Indianapolis. And if that happens, to me, then all of a sudden that's the favorite in the AFC South next year. Not knowing, of course, exactly all the moves the Titans are going to make, and they're going to look different. But I think the Colts are just built all around, top to bottom, a very solid football team moving forward.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, even with Meyer and Lawrence joining Jacksonville, the Colts are still the biggest threat with all the talent they have, including six All-Pros this season. Indy has their core pieces in place, and they always seem to find their next quarterback. Last but not least, their GM is one of the best as well. So got a texter agreeing with you that the Colts are the biggest threat. Let's go back there. Brian in Portland texts in and says, I think it all depends on who the Jags hire as coordinators, especially on the defensive side. But I'm definitely in wait-and-see mode with them and not really close to very nervous at all. History shows us that going from college to the NFL doesn't really work out in most cases, and this has been a select few, but not anything I'm worried about with Urban Meyer. And that seems to be a popular sentiment as well, is, you know, until you see a successful college coach go there on a regular basis to the NFL and sustain some success at that level, there's always going to be that skepticism. Although I will say, and we've talked about it a few times, Joe, I just think that, you know, the transition probably not as difficult now based on the way the game is played and how much more similar I think college football and NFL look like from a stylistic standpoint.
Right. Yeah. And I think that this really just comes down to, it's so much down to Trevor Lawrence, who to me looks like he could be a great NFL quarterback, but I've been fooled enough times to just wait and see on that. I mean, it's, hey, look, Ryan Leaf, I could have sworn to you was going to be, a 15-time All-Pro quarterback coming out of Washington State. Now, obviously, you know, it's funny to look back on something like that, but so many guys who have been drafted high who didn't work out, it's hard to imagine that he wouldn't at least be. I think he'll at least be a good quarterback in the NFL, but a good quarterback in the NFL doesn't guarantee anything. You still have to make so many other choices around building a team. And there's also the ownership questions with Jacksonville, the meddling when it comes to player acquisition. Tom Coughlin got scapegoated for everything. But is that really how it went down? Was it really all him? I mean, I think whenever there's ownership questions, and this goes for the Texans too, that can screw everything up. It's like, it's different, but it's kind of like when you look at UT football. You know, if you don't have harmony and competence top down, that could, you know, somehow in the translation, you lose some things. It's kind of like the Detroit Lions. You know, you have bad ownership, you can hire whoever you want, and usually that's going to end up coming back around to bite you.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, with Urban Meyer, is it possible he takes Fields in the draft to have a better fit with his offense? So, we've had a couple of people ask that question, Joe, of whether or not, you know, Urban Meyer going to Jacksonville, they consider taking Justin Fields ahead of Trevor Lawrence. I would just be floored if that's the case. I mean, Trevor Lawrence seems like he's got a chance to be a generational type of quarterback. But you've brought up Urban Meyer's offense and how heavily reliant it's been on the quarterback in the running game. And Justin Fields obviously has shown that he can do that as well as throw the ball down the field. Is there any chance at all that you think Jacksonville takes Justin Fields and not Trevor Lawrence?
Is Justin Fields a better runner than Trevor Lawrence?
I don't know. Trevor Lawrence runs the ball pretty well.
I don't know that he is. So no, I don't think that'll happen. And I think that you can do any sort of thing that you want to do, which again, in this league, we're seeing it more. But I still think you got to be careful about that. You can't go full Tebow, okay, in the NFL. But I think anything you want to do with a quarterback run game, you can do with Trevor Lawrence as easily as you can do with Justin Fields. I think Trevor Lawrence right now is a better all-around quarterback. Now, I think Justin Fields could end up being great too. I mean, I think they could both be generational quarterbacks, but I think Trevor Lawrence is more of a sure thing. But yeah, I mean, the idea that, like, I mean, Trevor Lawrence isn't just some like drop back statuesque Dan right. Marino dude. I mean, that guy is a hell of an athlete. So no, I'd be floored too. I don't think there's any way. And in fact, during the process here, some people who were reporting on this specifically mentioned Urban's intrigue with Trevor Lawrence. So, I mean, they're going to take Trevor Lawrence.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kevin in Nashville texts in and says, the college coaches that have worked out have been players' coaches that had baggage in college. The disciplinarians have not worked out in the NFL. And, Joe, that goes back to what you brought up earlier in the show. It's going to be very interesting to see how Urban Meyer handles this from an approach standpoint to dealing with players in the NFL, because obviously it's much different than what you have to do in college with 18 to 22 year olds.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Pete Carroll thing is the great example of sort of laid back sort of approach. You know, I mean, he's got that. I mean, I think he treated the USC job like it was a pro job. I mean, practice is open and, you know, all the celebrities coming to watch practice, the players are getting paid, you know, I mean, it was very much like a pro job at USC, so it wasn't much of a transition for him. Urban Meyer, and this includes like a 5,000 word story I did this summer on how he ran his program, and I didn't know a lot about how how tough he was until I did that. Man, he was tough. He was a tough coach as a big believer in you stand up this play right now. Tell me with coaches and with players. And, you know, again, I just think that stuff plays a lot better with college kids and young people who are naturally, you know, learning the game and looking up to coaches more than professionals and guys in their 30s who are making a lot of money. I just think you have to have a different approach. I mean, now Urban Meyer is smart enough to understand that, but it remains to be seen whether he can actually do it.
Coming up next, we'll dive back into the Nashville Predators. We will be joined by the legendary Terry Crisp. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth are with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in the legendary Terry Crisp, Predators TV analyst. Crispy, what's going on, my man? How in the world are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How could I not be in this world happy today? I mean, we've had all kinds of negative stuff passing through for the first year or better. But this morning I got up, I attended a hockey game last night, a real hockey game last night. The Predators won. It was entertaining. I got a nice cup of coffee on the go and talking to you, gentlemen. Hey, I'm living the good life.
It all sounded great up until that last part, Crispy, where you're forced to talk to us, but we'll try to make it as painless as possible.
I thought I might slide that one through. You know what I mean? You're a loud one.
Thanks, Chris. We appreciate that. So, Crispy, what were your thoughts on the game last night? Obviously, 3-1 win for the Predators. You start the season off on the right foot. But what did you think of the way that they played the game last night coming out of the gate to begin the season?
Okay. As a fan, entertaining. Very entertaining hockey. For the first game of the season, everybody knew that you're going to get some rust off both teams your first game. And obviously there's a lot of rust out there, but I thought both teams came to play. Tortorella and Heinze had their teams ready. I thought the speed from both teams was exciting. I mean, both teams showed all kinds of speed out there. They're up and down. The one thing you'd notice is that on both sides of the fence, this one of the ice, a lot of scoring chances. They did not put the puck in because, again, like I said, the rust. And I think the entertaining part last night for the first game was both goaltenders played awesome. Corpusello and Saros for us, and Corpusello for them, made some point-blank saves, like 6 or 7, that would bring the audience to their feet and clapping and cheering. So overall, very, very entertaining hockey game.
So, Crispy, does this team look about like you thought it would when last season ended? Just as you look back on all, you know, the offseason and all the different things that David Poile did or could have done. I mean, is this about what you thought that we would see? Is it basically the same team with, you know, some additions to try to be a little bit grittier and grimier? Any surprises?
You know, no, not a surprise. Like I said, I'm going to go back to the adage I used, first game of the season. And guys did not exactly have all of their timing. I mean, practice is great. Scrimmage is nice. But when you start playing the real game, the boys on the opposite side of the ice of you aren't giving you any room to move. I thought that we moved the puck well. We missed a lot of good scoring chances, which I just put down to being rusty. But the good part was we were getting the chances. We were moving the puck, getting to it. I thought we might see, but I'm going to lean again on that if you want to use it as a crutch, the first game of the season. In the defensive zone, again, a little more cleanup job to help out. But having said that, when you look back at Ekholm making a nice save on an empty net goal or an empty net that they could have scored, blocking shots, Benning took one, Joey took one. Yeah, you know what? I thought the guys had they were into it. But I still say, as we go along, we're going to meet tougher teams, bigger teams, and we're going to have to match them in that area.
Preds TV analyst Terry Crisp on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Crispy, you brought up Johansson there, and we all know how big of a year this is for him. And John Hines has made no secret about trying to get him to play at a certain level. As you look at Ryan Johansson and his game, what do you want to see from him this season with the Predators?
You know what? Joey is skilled. I don't know if anybody's ever been with Joy. He's one of the neatest guys to be with, talk and chatter with. He loves the game. He loves life. He's got so much skill. And I always look at if I'm coaching a player like him, is if you talk to him about every day or every second day and let him know just how good he is, because some of the plays he can make and what he sees out there is unbelievable. So I expect this season Joey to have one of his. But I also expect playing with Forsberg and Arvey along with them, that Joey's game should be as good as anybody's in the league up the middle. And that's what I'm looking for from Joey. I want him. You know, as a coach, you sometimes get caught into these ruts where you're talking, oh, what a game Pekarina had, how good Saros was, oh, Forsberg was the best, and this. And sometimes there's certain players on your team that say, you know what, I'd like to share a little bit of that. I'm not saying it's you, but give some players other than the ones he's regular, give them their dues, give them their praise, and I think that goes a long ways towards helping guys come along.
Crispy, one guy I noticed last night in terms of how much he was bothering the opponent was Nick Cousins. Looks like a guy who's going to bring some fire, some physicality, and he's not afraid to mix it up and talk a little bit. How much do you think that helps this team to have someone?
I love it. Good call on that one, because Coach Hines said he's sneaky good. He's sneaky skilled. He's sneaky forechecking, backchecking. You can hear and see about two or three of the Columbus Blue Jackets chirping away at him. First game, he got them chirping. And I looked out at on the ice. And imagine if you threw Cousins out there and put Grimaldi in the middle and put Arvey on the right, on the other side, just turn them loose for a few shifts. they might never touch the puck, but I can guarantee you the other team wouldn't either. Because they fly around the ice. They're exciting to watch. And I think Cousins is going to be one of those guys we're going to start to love in the end. But overall, I thought Holla came to play last night too, because you're looking at the new guys. Obviously, you know what you've got in your standby, the regulars. But looking at the new ones, those guys, Richardson last night showed some speed for what I want to see. But, Nick Cousins is going to become a fan favorite also, the same as Arvey and Grimaldi.
Crispy, the goal Forsberg scores last night, obviously an incredible play by him to just get the puck and be able to lead that odd man rush. What are your expectations for him this year? Because with the talent that guy has, I've always kind of thought, you know, as good as he's been, as great as he's been for this team, there's probably still another level that's there. What are your expectations for Forsberg? And do you think there is another level that he can reach this year?
You know what? I do think there's another level. And not that he's not giving it, but he's going to surprise himself probably and do it. And because he is, well, let's be honest, the most skilled guy in our hockey club. And I'm not taking anything away from Yossi or Ekholm or Ellis or any of them at all. Let's be fair about that. But Forsberg, when he's on his game, and the two players on our team that can take the whole, when there's our fans are full, the stands are full of fans, and make them stand up and say, ooh, something's going to happen when he has the puck coming over the center ice, is Forsberg and Yossi. Forsberg has one of the best shots in the, I don't care, for a snapshot, wrist, whatever, and he thinks the game. And as we go along this season, I think you're going to see that Forsberg come to life for us and lead this hockey club.
Well, speaking of fans, Crispy, what was last night like in the building? Obviously, hopefully that there will be more people as we move forward. But what was that experience like?
You know what? It was sort of creepy, eerie when you first walk in, when you're used to all your fans greeting you in the concourse, and you watch the kids walking by in their little jerseys and the parents and the hot dogs and the whole atmosphere. You can't beat that. You'll never replace that with that. The cardboard cutouts are funny if you got to have some humor in some of the ones you have. And the other thing is, I don't know how to voice this. You guys are in the business, but the sound effects are unbelievable. Like, Lindsay and I are sitting there doing the game, and there'd be almost a goal scored. Like, Arvey had come down and just missed, nick the post, and it'd be like the real fans would be like, ooh! And when it was a good hit, you'd hear the thing. I don't know who's, is it called a mixer?
Yeah.
That would you might use that. The mixer is great. I don't know who it is. I like to meet them. but a great job to give you, as close as they can, the ambiance of having our fans really in the building.
Hey, Crispy, it was amazing to just how strange it was, like you pointed out. Like, the sound effects and everything was great, but, you know, when you've got a scramble in front of the net and you're used to hearing the crowd just, you know, the oohs and ahs, and all of a sudden you can hear, like, players just yelling at each other on the ice. It was very interesting to see that happen.
I was thinking to myself, because hey, I love John Tortorella, coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets. And I don't know if it's skills, he probably, Hal Gill said, even with a mask on, nobody, you can hear Tortorella all the way up to his booth across the ice and up where they were. I'm sure glad when I was coaching, it wasn't like this. I'd have been suspended for sure.
Predators TV analyst Terry Crisp has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex. So, Crispy, great stuff as always. We appreciate you taking time to join us. And hopefully that was as painless as possible for you having to talk to us today.
You know what, guys? Like I said, it's always great. And the greatest part about the morning was with you guys was my coffee.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate that. very well done, Crispy.
Sorry, guys. I don't want to hurt your feelings. You know what I mean? Have a great one. See you all at the rink.
All right. Terry Crisp, one of the best in the business. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about the Preds, their big win last night against Columbus. How did they do it, and what do you have to look forward to based off that one game with this group over this next trip? Next stretch? We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Here's Philip Forsberg breaking in 2-on-1. He scores! Philip Forsberg from the left circle! And folks, sorry, no dessert tonight, but the Predators wrap up the season opening 3-1 victory.
I thought as the game went along, we played better. I thought our best period was the third period. But I think just the way that the game went, you know, the way we got down, we hit the post, and then they come down and score. And, you know, they're a good team. They're tight checking. There's not a lot of room. You have to fight for your ice offensively. And you know, I really just liked our mindset through the game, whether it was on the bench or in between periods. We just kept playing and figuring out what we needed to do a little bit better. And so we stayed with it and, you know, wound up tying the game and then finding a way to win it. So good first night. We'll take the positives out of it. And then I think there's lots of lessons and things we can do a little bit better also.
One down and 55 to go for the Nashville Predators as they get their season underway last night with a 3-1 win against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, taking you through this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, I was at Bridgestone last night, and it was obviously really weird to not have fans in there. And I thought the game to start with was pretty sloppy on both sides. And you expect that in the first game of the season, especially a season where you've had training camp for basically like a week and a half, 2 weeks to get ready for this. So I wasn't surprised by that. I thought the quality of play got better on both sides as the game went along in terms of just execution. And I thought the Predators got better as the game went along. I was impressed by what I saw. I still think room to grow offensively, and they had their moments where they looked dangerous offensively, but still a lot of work to do in that area. But I was very impressed by what I saw defensively in that game, especially in the second period. And in the third, I mean, they just completely shut down Columbus. I mean, John Tortorella, Columbus head coach, was talking last night, said they did not have a scoring chance in the third period. So from that standpoint, I thought the Predators got better in that game as it went along, and it was an impressive start to a 56-game season. Still not perfect, but I think you started off on the right foot last night if you're the Predators.
Yeah, you want to see more opportunities created in 5-on-5, you know, you want to clean up some of the mistakes. But two things that I really liked. One, they made the mistake. It cost them, and they continued to get better through the game, and they responded to it the way you want a team to respond. You know, they just kept doing what they do, and they got better at it. And I think last year's team, in various adverse situations, didn't respond well. And then, like you said, the other part is that third period. I mean, the Blue Jackets had one shot, I think, until like the last minute, you know, when they're empty net and, you know, scrambling and trying to score. So, I mean, that's encouraging. I thought the Preds really were in the offensive zone a lot in that third period with the lead. So I thought that they looked harder to play against, like they've talked about. You still have to be able to generate enough offense. But overall, I thought the intangibles that we saw were encouraging, especially compared to what we saw too often last season.
It was, and Saros played really well in goal, 29 saves, made a couple of huge ones in the first period and in the second period on a couple of point-blank opportunities. A couple of things that stood out to me immediately in that game last night, and I've talked about it before, with the third pairing of Mark Borowiecki and Matt Benning. You know, a lot of times in the last 3 to 4 years, when the third pairing gets out on the ice, my eyes kind of get up because I'm looking to see what's going to happen, because quite frankly, at times it's been a disaster out there on that third pair. And I've always had the saying, I mean, you don't need a third pair to go out there and win you a game. You need them to go out there and just not screw it up. And too many times I thought that's bit the Predators over the course of the past few years. And there's going to be drop-off. Like, obviously, you're not going to get the same quality of play on your third pair as you get in your top four with guys like Ekholm and Josi and Ellis and Fabro. But I thought Borowiecki and Benning were really, really good last night. They were solid. They got time in on the penalty kill, which I think is going to help Josi and Ellis and Ekholm as the season goes on, and maybe taking some weight off their shoulders on that front. I thought those two were really solid 5-on-5, to the point where I think it's a pretty clear upgrade on the third pairing. And to me, that kind of leads into the way I think this team is going to have to play, and that is defensively. I've said it. I feel as good about this six on defense as I felt in a long time. And to me, just from a tactical standpoint, if you're the Predators, that's going to have to be the way you win. Yes, the intangibles are going to have to be a part of it. You're going to have to be hard to play against, and you're going to have to get timely goals by your top players offensively, which they got last night with Philip Forsberg. But defensively, I think this team has a chance to be really, really good. And to me, that's the way I have to go about trying to win these games if I'm the Predators.
Yeah, I mean, it's not sexy, and it's not maybe as they're not as talented, they're not as dangerous as recent versions have been. But if you shore that up and you're reliable and consistent there, well, that's a big upgrade from last year when I thought, you know, some of the goaltending issues last year, it's hard for me anyway to, you know, separate those things sometimes, or to really judge, like, okay, Pekka-Rinne had a terrible night tonight, but my gosh, how many mistakes did they make in the defensive zone, that hung him out to dry? If you clean that stuff up, then you go a long way toward being a better team. And you, like you said, you have to. I still think that this team can be better offensively. You know, you get Granlund back in there. I liked what Duchesne did last night. I thought his line looked pretty good at times, but you still are you're going to probably have to win more 2-1, 3-2 games with this team than in the past when you could win 5-4 games.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Rainey texts in and says, one thing I noticed about the Preds last night that they failed to do over the last couple of seasons is diving in front of pucks and blocking a lot of shots. And to that point, I mean, Borowiecki ends up with 3 block shots last night, Matt Benning with a couple of block shots, Ryan Johansson with a couple of block shots in the slot. It seemed like there was a buy-in last night defensively, not just from the defensemen and paying the price and getting in shooting lanes that way. I thought the forwards did a great job last night defensively. The center iceman, Duchesne, had some moments where he looked good defensively. Ryan Johansson, I thought, was excellent in the defensive zone last night. So I think you know what you're going to get out of guys like Colton Sissons on that front. But when you have all of your forwards buying in defensively like I thought they were last night, that makes this team pretty dangerous and pretty difficult to score against. And I thought, to Rainey's point, there was a commitment level last night to blocking shots and stepping in front of shooting lanes. And, you know, we talk about being hard to play against. John Hines mentioned it after the game. That's part of it. I mean, being, you know, willing to block shots and able to block shots, that's part of being difficult to play against. I thought the Predators did a great job of that last night.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought it was better. It looked, I mean, obviously you expect a team to make a big jump in that area, like from regular season to postseason, which we saw from the Preds, even though it didn't go well for them in the bubble. But, you know, you saw a jump in that, and this looked more like that kind of approach versus last year when at times it didn't look that way. It didn't look like you had that buy-in. And to your point, I mean, I thought Benning on one of those blocks, I thought maybe he might have an issue because he was really gripping the wrist hand area, but he was able to keep going. So that's maybe something to keep an eye on. But, I mean, those guys are, like you said, they're an upgrade. And when And they are clearly getting John Hines' trust on the penalty kill. And so maybe there's a ripple effect there too, you know, for guys like Yossi, if he's able to, you know, get a little bit more of a break this year, at least on the PK right now. And maybe that benefits him, you know, all around. Of course, we're talking about a guy who just won the Norris, so it's not like he needs a lot of help. But still, I mean, if you can trust those guys there, that also speaks to what you've done to upgrade there. And like you said, that's been a problem the last few years.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Our friend Kathleen texts in and says, a 2-1 win gets you as many points as a 4-2 win. A win is a win in this league. And obviously she's right. And I think, you know, if you're the Predators, the willingness to buy into that and to commit to the way that you need to play, I think that's going to be important for this group. Now, I'm not saying that you've just got to, you know, reserve yourself to the fact you're going to score 2 or 3 goals every night. I still think this team has good players offensively and is more talented than a lot of Predators teams that we've seen in the past on that side of the puck. I mean, obviously, on paper, you think back to the team a couple years ago that won the President's Trophy and the team, you know, a couple years ago that won the Central Division, even last year. I mean, that team, we know it didn't work out on the ice, but from a pure talent perspective, probably more talented offensively. As we know, talent doesn't always lead to success on the ice. So if you're the Predators, I think just buying into a certain way you've got to play, if the players can do that, you can be just as dangerous winning games 2-1 as you are with a high-powered offense trying to outscore people.
So I know that this is not a, you know, this is a trivial question in the big picture, but it is interesting to me. If you're John Hines right now, after the way Saros played last night, you have a break, you have a day between games. Who do you start in goal tomorrow?
Oh, I'm going back Saros. I think with the way he played last night, yeah, I don't even consider it. I think with the way that he played last night, I think it's important to establish him into a rhythm early. Because remember, I mean, think back to Saros in his career, and I realize it's a different situation now with him being the starter. He struggled out of the gate in his career. So the fact, number one, that he played as well as he did yesterday is encouraging to me. I want to keep that going. And regardless, I mean, you look at Monday and Tuesday of next week, you're going to have a back-to-back set with Carolina. So Pekka's going to play in one of those two games, if I had to guess. So to me, I'm not even considering it. I'm going with Saros tomorrow night again against Columbus.
And I think he was – I mean, I think he was definitely one of the best parts of the opener. Again, it's one game. We've seen him play well a lot. But I mean, after the postseason, I was underwhelmed by his performance there. I thought there were a few pucks that he let in that, like, you got to have those saves if you're going to make any kind of postseason run. And it was good for the Preds to see him play like that, because I thought he really saved them early when they weren't playing their best, especially on that Grigorenko shot from the slot in the second period. But there were some other moments too early where, you know, the Preds were making some mistakes. The Blue Jackets were getting opportunities. He stood up, and that was an encouraging thing, you know, as a guy who I think has got to be the guy who gets the bulk of the work this year.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in and says, what moves can we make midseason to actually make this team a cup contender? My immediate reaction to that is, let's breathe a little bit. Let's let this season marinate and see what plays out. But to me, I mean, the obvious, I don't know if you want to call it issue or move that's going to be on the table for this team, if David Poile feels like this is a team to compete, I mean, you're still going to have to add somebody in your top six. I mean, I like Luke Cunning, and I like, you know, Eric Halla. I think they played really well last night as a line. And I'm interested to see what Granlund does when he comes back. But I still think if there's going to be a part of this team that David Poile wants to add to as the season goes on and they can play well and establish themselves as a legitimate threat in the playoffs, I do think a top six winger is probably going to be the number one target for Poile.
Bye, bye, bye. You already got him buying again.
One game in. It's a sprint, baby, not a marathon.
Yeah. I do want, like, if you remember, obviously, a couple years ago, it was all about getting someone who can, quote, unquote, get to the hard areas.
Yeah.
And obviously, we know it just didn't work out the way they wanted. But I look at this team, and I do wonder, like, do they have enough of that? Do they have enough, you know, physicality? Do they need someone like that? But, yeah, long way from David Poile selling something off to make a run at this point.
I got my first tweet yesterday about the Predators and trading for Taylor Hall. So the first day of the season, that's going to happen. We'll see how often that continues to happen as we go down the stretch here with the Nashville Predators. When we come back, we'll get back into the Urban Meyer saga with the Jacksonville Jaguars. What do we think it's going to look like for him in Jacksonville? How much control should the Jags give him? We'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.